Episode of What the Tech is brought to you by Slack. Slack is a messaging app which brings together all your team's communication into one place, making work simpler and more productive. Go to slack.com to learn more. Simple Contacts, an easy and convenient way to renew your contact lens prescription or reorder your contacts from anywhere within minutes. Get $30 off your contact lenses by visiting simplecontacts.com/Andrew and entering the promo code Andrew. Hey everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarin. Of course, I'm joined by Paul, the Mad Dog Thurrott.
How you doing?
How are you, Paul?
I'm okay.
You're okay.
A busy.
Yeah. Well, look where I am. I'm not even not in my studio. I'm in my office, and it's very bare in here. Barren.
You look like you're somewhere. In the bowels of a.
I'm in the bowels of something, I'll tell you that. We do have a lot to talk about. E3, obviously, a lot of news from E3. A lot of people are losing their minds over Nintendo. I don't know why.
Yeah, because it was terrible.
I don't know. You know what? They announced two games. What else are what are they going to do?
They had a bunch of adults sitting on a couch holding Pikachu cushions, talking to each other about nonsense.
Obviously that, and of course the Xbox news we're going to talk about. But before we do, guys, I do want to take a moment and talk about our phenomenal sponsor, and that's Slack. I want to thank Slack for supporting What the Tech. Slack is a collaboration hub that lets you organize your team's work into channels where everyone is included. Relevant information is in one place, and new team members can easily get up to speed. I use Slack on a regular basis here, my undisclosed location, because it makes my life so much easier when I need to send information from one department to the other and combine the information. It's actually amazing. Of course, you can find out more by going to slack.com, where work happens, slack.com. I want to thank them for supporting the show. And of course, you know, as someone that uses the service, it makes it very easy for me to talk about, and I'm proud to talk about them on the show. Slack.com. Paul, I want to go right into this. No chit-chat today. Not chit-chatting with you. I do want to talk about the Xbox stuff because this is big. They announced their next generation Xbox.
Yeah, I mean, very vaguely. I had heard that there was going to be a next generation Xbox back in late March, actually. And it was tied to the whole Terry was leaving thing when I was having lots of conversations with people from Microsoft about what was going on. And one of them kind of just let that slip out, you know, that, you know, as you know, probably know, we're working on the next Xbox. And I was like, whoa, hold on a second. What's happening here?
As I know.
Because I had always thought, or not always, but I had recently been thinking that given their lack of success with Xbox hardware, that Microsoft would move to this game service thing next. Like that would be the future of Xbox. And interestingly, at E3, Microsoft confirmed both of those things, that A, they are in fact going to have a next generation of Xbox consoles. In fact, Phil Spencer literally said consoles. Brad, just days later, confirmed that there is a family of Xboxes coming in 2020. Probably so backward compatible.
We're seeing family of Xboxes.
Yeah, but if you think about the Xbox One today, there are two devices, right? So there's an Xbox One S and Xbox One X. If you look at the time frame, you know, 3 years after the Xbox One X, it makes sense that the new base version would be like an Xbox One X, and the new high end one will be something better. So that's a family. It's probably just a few, you know, two devices, like a cost reduced HD or a 4K version, and then we don't know what it is. Microsoft doesn't know what it is. Okay. But the other thing they confirmed was that the future of Xbox is in fact this game service, right? This hardware agnostic will run anywhere you are kind of game streaming service. And so that's okay, the thing I've been talking about.
Let's break that down a little bit for people who are not up to speed on that. What is that service? What do we know and what do we think it's going to turn into?
Well, I mean, right now Microsoft has various services, you know, Xbox branded. The closest one is something called Xbox Game Pass. And so for $9.99 a month, what you get is a collection of over 100 games in the catalog you can download to your Xbox and play as you would normally as if you own them, you know. And it's a tremendous bargain. I talk about that a lot. I think Xbox Game Pass, as it is today, is a great bargain. You know, over on the Sony side, they have something called PlayStation. What is it called? PlayStation Now? PlayStation, I forget what it's called. But the PlayStation service is more like a Netflix or a Spotify type thing where you actually stream the games. And so they provide games across the three previous generations of the consoles, PS4, PS3, PS2. Xbox does the same. Most of the games are actually in Xbox Game Pass. Actually, they might all be Xbox One games. I'm not really sure. But the big difference there is that you have to download the games on Xbox and you don't stream them from the cloud. That could be changing. I think that's going to change. In the short term, what they're implementing is a feature. I can't remember the exact name, but it was something like Fast Startup. And the basic theory here is that today, if you were to buy an Xbox game or download a game from Xbox Game Pass, you know, it takes quite a bit of time to download these games, especially some of the newer, bigger games. They can be enormous, like tens of gigabytes. And they support I don't know the name of the feature, but they support a technology where you've downloaded, say, 20 or 25% of the game. And then a little thing will pop up and say, hey, you can start playing now because they've downloaded enough of it that you can go through the beginning part of the game or whatever. And it progressively downloads and enables more functionality as you go. So they're going to improve on that to make the experience on the service today a little more instantaneous, right? So that's obviously important. But I think where they're headed, and I think the point of this Xbox service, whatever it's called, whenever it's implemented, you know, is to expand on Xbox Game Pass, expand on the platform agnostic qualities of Xbox, where today they have games that work across Windows 10 and Xbox One. They also have backward compatible games that play on Xbox One that were originally designed for Xbox 360 and for the original Xbox. And so there's kind of a nice, you know, just a compatibility thing going on there. And so the expansion there in the future will be, you don't have to have an Xbox. You don't even necessarily have to have a Windows PC. You should be able to stream a game to any device, a tablet, a phone, a TV, set-top box, you know, whatever it might be. And you probably have to have an Xbox controller, right, to play the games. You probably connect it with Bluetooth or with a USB cable. And we'll see how that goes. I mean, you know, there are a lot of doubters out there because of the bandwidth and latency issues with such a service. But, you know, 5G is coming. Microsoft has the infrastructure. They're not going to just replace hardware with a service. They'll do both side by side. Who knows? There may be a coming generation after the next generation of consoles too, but at some point, you know, and again, I've been saying this for years now, like this is the future of Microsoft and gaming. There's no doubt about
it. Well, do you remember OnLive?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that kind of a service.
So OnLive, I used it. And I mean, we're going back. I mean, we were doing the show at that point and we're going back 5-6 years, right? I mean, quite a few years ago.
I used it too, actually, very briefly. Yeah.
And it was not bad. It wasn't great, but it wasn't bad at all. And then they went over and they started doing like that remote desktop computers. Yeah. So you can log in and do that stuff. But here's the thing with this. So if we're talking about let's say $9.99 a month or whatever the price is going to be, right? They didn't announce a price for this.
No. It's just years away still. So,
yeah. So let's say $14.99 a month and you have a catalog of Xbox One, Xbox 360, original Xbox, you know, whatever catalog that they have, and you could download these things and play it or stream and play. The devices that you're going to play on, are these going to be Microsoft devices, or we could potentially see this on an Apple TV?
Yeah, no, it should be anything. That's the point. It literally is wherever you are. And
that's what the problem
is. When you think about
it,
right? That's the whole Microsoft vibe today.
That is, but now your overall experience is out of Microsoft's hands. You could say that the bandwidth plays a part and all this plays a part, but they can't control the hardware. I don't know.
The point
how...
is the hardware does. No, but the hardware doesn't matter. It is the OnLive thing. You're remoting an experience. The processing is happening, up in the cloud. Yeah. So, yeah, bandwidth is going to be an issue. Yeah, I think it is. And I hear the complaints. You know, I get it, but it's happening. I mean,
you know who could do this? You know who could do this better than Microsoft? Nintendo. with their old catalog of, I mean, think about what are they remoting? What are they streaming?
Because of the game types.
Yeah, because of the game types. I mean, if you're going back to SNES or Nintendo.
I think the big deal here isn't that people want to play Microsoft games, right? Microsoft has, a handful of reasonable AAA titles of note, you know, Halo, Forza, and then it kind of falls off the map. I mean, Gears of War is kind of a second tier kind of a thing. And then there are a handful of other ones. But the big one is Halo, obviously. Those games don't come out very often. You know, Call of Duty can crank out a game every year, and that game, whatever that game is, whatever year it comes out, outsells any copy of Halo, even though those things only come out every 5 or 6 years or whatever it is. So the idea of this, though, has to be that you're playing those third-party games, right? It only makes sense if the Call of Duties of the worlds, the Battlefields of the worlds, the Fortnites, the PUBGs, the whatever they are, whatever the big games are these days, the Maddens, the everything, like that's where it makes sense. Will a console offer a better experience? Yeah, probably, and especially at first. But we already support different styles of game playing today. There are different types of devices. You can play games on phones and tablets and whatever. I mean, this is a very natural thing. And I think that they won't be alone doing this. You know, Sony will try to do it. Sony is already streaming games to a level that Microsoft is not. That's kind of interesting. I just think Microsoft has the better infrastructure and it can leapfrog Sony. And Nintendo will probably try, but Nintendo tends to kind of go their own route with everything. And yeah, you know, they'll talk about how they still see the value in hardware and their unique, weird, games.
Listen, and they were right. I mean, look at the Switch, right? I mean, it's amazing because the Wii was successful. The Wii U did not sell at all. It was as far as a platform goes, it was a failure. People were saying it's the end of Nintendo. Should they abandon the hardware business? Should they just license to Apple? I mean, all these things. And then the Switch comes out. This thing is a home run, top to bottom.
Yeah.
Yep. I see it all the time in the city. I'm taking the subway and people are playing on their Switch on the subway. I'm blown away by it. And, quality is fine. You don't need to have top of the line quality, graphics because the games aren't there for that. It's cartoonish. I find it very interesting. I mean, the streaming concept is the future, obviously.
Yeah. The big hit game today is Fortnite, right? And Fortnite is inarguably a ripoff of other games, right? It looks like Overwatch. It plays like PUBG,
Yeah.
It's there really isn't much in the way of new ideas there.
Do you like Fortnite? Have you played it?
I have played it. I was just looking at it today, actually, for a few minutes. Fortnite, those kind of games to me are kind of old school. They remind me of the Unreal Tournament games or Quake Arena. They're kind of, I don't know. I still prefer Call of Duty personally, but 125 million people are playing Fortnite right now. And
that's amazing.
You can credit. Yeah, it's unbelievable. So granted, it's, it's free, but it's not just like you can throw out a piece of crap that's free. That doesn't mean you're going to get 125 million users. Like it has to work too. And I think part of the appeal of Fortnite is that it works well on different types of hardware because it is that kind of cartoonish, almost Nintendo style graphics quality. They're not trying to show you a gritty, realistic version of like World War II or something. There, it's a cartoon world, and those kind of graphics can run really fast on a lot of different kinds of hardware. So I think they hit on a good formula that isn't just the fact that it's free, although that doesn't hurt.
But also got a lot of buzz, and then they have the they have licensed characters in there, and they're doing things like that. I mean, I think that's the unique part of it. Yeah, it's not necessarily that it's free, but it's cross-platform. You can play on anything. I mean, it's going to be cross-platform on essentially every single, platform that you can play on. That's what really makes it interesting.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, let's see if it continues, right? Because the way that these trends go with these games, some of these games, they rise up and then they just fall apart.
To me, the Microsoft, the idea of the Microsoft game service is very much like the idea of progressive web apps, right? And what I mean by that is as you just mentioned, Fortnite is available on every platform. For that to be true, the developers of Fortnite had to make a version of that game independently of each other that ran on every platform, because these platforms are all completely incompatible with each other for the most part. So you have PC and Xbox and PlayStation and Nintendo Switch, and maybe it runs on some other things as well, whatever the platforms are. But there's some number of platforms, and that's the way mobile apps have worked. That's the way desktop apps worked back in the day. If you had Microsoft Word or Excel, and you were going to make a version for Windows, you were going to make a version for the Mac. Mobile comes along, you're going to make a version for iOS, a version for Android, whatever. Those things are all completely different. Progressive web apps lets you make the app once, and it just runs automatically on all those platforms I just named. And that's the dream of this Xbox service. You're still compatible with a thing, and that thing is the Xbox platform in the cloud, whatever it's called. You know, this is something that Microsoft still hasn't discussed how that works. But the idea, though, is that it's hardware agnostic. It will work on whatever device you have. And I just see the value in it, and I can hear the complaints coming already. I get it. They're the same complaints we hear about progressive web apps. But you can't do this, you can't do that. And yeah, I get it. I mean, there'll always be native apps. Relax. But this is going to solve a problem for game makers, and it's going to solve a problem for game players. And in the same way you were talking, you mentioned Nintendo Switch on the subway or whatever, in the bus.
Yeah.
You know, the beauty of that scenario is you get to take the game with you when you go. But when you go home, you can plug it into that dock thing and put it up on the screen, and it's kind of cool. Microsoft does that a little bit with Xbox Play Anywhere today, where you can be playing a game up on your Xbox on a console with a big screen. And then you can take your Surface to work and play it on the bus or the train or whatever it is. And you're in the same game because it's cross-compatible. It's not just the same game running on a different thing. It's the same game you were playing, like your saves and your settings and everything are all in there. So
cross-saving.
Yeah. It's you're playing the same game. So it's about, you know, portability, essentially, right? The compatibility that you get between, an Xbox and a Surface or whatever the device is pretty good. The ability to play the same game and have it scale properly and, you know, work maybe a little differently based on the hardware, maybe, I don't know, whatever however it works is awesome. I think people are going to love that. You know, a lot of people, it's going to benefit a lot of people.
So what do we know about the next Xbox? I mean, obviously we don't know much, but let's kind of go through what we do know and what we think they're going to do. I mean, every version of Xbox has had a primary focus, right? Obviously the original Xbox was, it was the Xbox. It was their first entry in this, but with the Xbox One, they kind of concentrated more on media, and then they went backwards a little bit. They said, okay, no, it's more about gaming. So where are we now with this version?
Nowhere. We have no idea. So, if you to kind of follow the theme of what you were saying, like with the Xbox 360, one of the deals was HD, right? And in the beginning, it was just 720p. They eventually pushed it up to 1080i. They added, remember, gesture control and voice control with the Kinect over time. Mm-hmm. And they did the media push, like you said, but then they kind of went back to gaming, you know. Xbox One, the deal was, I guess I would say, true 1080p, you know, at first. Xbox One X is obviously the first 4K, but 4K on entertainment experiences. And then HDR as well on Xbox. Was it X? I think HDR might have been Xbox One S. And then the X has HDR and 4K and a scalable experience depending on the needs of the game. You can hit 60 frames a second, and maybe it's not 4K, or you could go 4K and it'll be 30 frames a second. You know, sometimes it's up to the developer to choose. Sometimes the developer will let the gamer choose, you know, which they prefer. It sort of goes that way. So extrapolating from that, I would say the way I think of it is, in its early days, like literally Grad saw some internal documentation from late last year that talked about this new family of Xboxes. And it said something to the effect of, we have not defined what this is. Like, they don't even know the architecture. They really don't know. So that could be a little different today. That documentation is probably 6 months out of date, you know, whatever. It doesn't really matter. I think of it as what I would call true 4K. And I bet the goal of this thing is to leapfrog the Xbox One X in the same way that the X leapfrogs the original. And so HDR, obviously, 4K, obviously, but 4K all the time. And then 60 frames a second all the time. Yeah. Like this thing, I don't think we go like 8K or, you know, some goofy thing like that. The Dolby Atmos stuff is there. You're really just looking at taking what you've already done and perfecting it. And I think that's attainable in that 3-year time span, right? Between the X and whatever the, you know, the X2 or whatever it's called. And I think that's, you know, again, it's a different way of looking at a console life cycle. Remember back in the day, you'd release a device, an Atari 2600 or whatever. Then you wouldn't update it, and it would be out in the market for X number of years, and games would come out, and they'd get better over time. But then the next thing would come out, and it may or may not be backwards compatible. Nothing would sit unchanged in the market. The only thing that in recent years that really changed was that console makers would release like cost-reduced versions of consoles. Just to save themselves some costs and then lower the cost of the console, they, you know, it would make it more viable over time. But think this is completely changing now. And so with the Xbox, you see like the original, the S, the X, and now there's going to be this next thing. And it's a continuum that's probably going to span, it's 10 years, you know.
Yeah, so that's the other thing. So when this version comes out, whatever it is, what happens to the life cycle of the previous consoles that we have on the market? Like you said, there's the Xbox One right now. There's the Xbox One S. There's the Xbox One X.
I think the...
Am I missing anything? How many more do we need?
No, there's been three so far. So the original's already gone.
Yeah.
The S is the base unit. It's often available for next to nothing. It's wonderful how cheap that thing can be had. And then the X is the, you know, $500 version. So I think... The S goes away as we go forward, not right away, but you know, it will. And then the beauty of this is, imagine you're an Xbox fan, right? And so you bought a bunch of Xbox 360 games and they announced the Xbox One. Well, the Xbox One is based on a completely different architecture. It cannot natively run any Xbox 360 game. That was a PowerPC device. But it does this backward compatibility thing. And over time they add, there are several hundred games now that run perfectly normally, including original gen too, on the Xbox One. And so you're not all of it, but a huge chunk of your software library that the investment you made can carry forward with you as you move forward to a new console. And if you look at the Xbox One consoles in turn, each of them adds something. You know, I talked about 4K content and HDR on the S, 4K games, Dolby Atmos, you know, on the X. They get better as they move forward, but the games all still work. And remember, you know, the nicest thing about the Xbox One X, I mean, if you just kind of boil it down, was that if you bought an original Xbox 3 years earlier and you were wondering whether or not you should upgrade, the thing you had to look forward to was every single game you already owned not only will work fine, but will look and run better on the X, guaranteed. Yeah. And that's an amazing thing that goes well above and beyond the whole compatibility thing. And I think that's the promise again for this next thing, right? That you're automatically, if you're playing, you know, Call of Duty or Destiny 2 or whatever it is, and it looks great on an X on a 4K display, when you get the next one, it's going to look better. It's going to run faster. You know, it's an automatic in-place upgrade, you know?
Yeah, actually, that's just run.
Like it's yeah.
Well, the marketing behind that is fascinating because now you're marketing towards older games that you enjoyed playing. You know, we've reached that generation, right? We've reached that generation where, like, the 8-bit, 16-bit era, you could play those forever. I feel like it didn't get dated as much. I mean, some games may have gotten dated, but overall, like, yeah. I could go back and on my little, you know, Nintendo box, I could go back and play an SNES game. And not say, wow, this looks gross. You couldn't really do that with the PS1 era because everything was blocky, everything looked crappy, even the PlayStation 2. But now that we're into this different era and it's doing, you know, it's filling in and it's making things look good, I feel like you're also catering to that group.
There's this thing, I didn't even realize this was going to happen, but, you know, I talk a lot about the Xbox platform and Microsoft strategy, and I think they're doing all the right things, right? And a lot of this was forced on them. It was just the way the market went. They're losing to Sony in the console war, but badly. And, you know, they had to make adjustments to this strategy. And what they've arrived at is this thing that is so friendly to consumers and gamers that it's just amazing. And all that compatibility stuff I was talking about, cross-play, whatever, all factors into it. But part of this enhanced for Xbox One X program that they have, where they have hundreds of games that were made for the original Xbox One or the Xbox One S or whatever, look and play better on the X, and not just because of the additional performance and the better graphics that you just get automatically, but because the developers actually went back and said, hey, you know, it's not really that hard to enable this stuff. We already have the high quality assets or whatever. We can just throw them in there and then the thing will, you know, look even better. I didn't know they were going to do this, but there are games that came up for the 360 that have been enhanced for Xbox One X.
Interesting.
So now we've got previous generation games where the developers have actually gone in and said, oh, we can just throw in some more assets and this thing will just automatically be better. Amazing, it's just turned it. It's wonderful. You know?
Yeah. It's amazing. I do actually have a tip to follow up with that because mm-hmm. I discovered a very cool cable. I've really got into retro gaming recently. I'm thinking about launching. Yeah. I'm thinking about launching an actual show behind this because I've kind of fallen in love with like playing those like games that I did when I was younger.
I would like to do the Intellivision game pick of the week if this happens.
Pong is my pick of the week. Yeah. Asteroid is my pick of the week. Yeah, I do want to continue all this, obviously, but I do want to take a little break and talk about our wonderful, wonderful sponsor. And I actually have a great story about these guys, and that's SimpleContacts.com. SimpleContacts.com/Andrew. So the thing about Simple Contacts is that it makes it so easy to order your contact lenses. So I wear prescription contact lenses, by the way. These beautiful brown eyes are just not, they're not for, you know, your amusement, Paul. They're not a science experiment. I'm getting stared at while I'm doing live reads now by everybody. So here's the great thing about Simple Contacts. So I have terrible allergies. I mean, I was dying all week and I had to swap my contact lenses out about 3 times because they were just destroyed from all the pollen. And it was gross. It really was a terrible experience for me last week. So I just kept popping these things in and out. And normally I would justify, you know, maybe saving the contact lenses because I don't want to go to the doctor and go through that whole process. It was so easy that I did my initial checkup with them. Now, this doesn't replace your annual visit or your 6-month visit to your eye doctor. This is not a replacement for that. But this is a very convenient way to get your contact lenses delivered to your door fast and easy at super competitive prices. I mean, that's a whole different story how pricing works. But here's a great offer. You can save $30 on your contact lenses at simplecontacts.com/Andrew when you use the promo code Andrew when you check out. So you could either go with the route where you have your prescription and you put it in and it's great. You just pick out the lenses. Or if you were like me and you were outdated with your prescription, you take a super fast eye exam. You stand away from the screen, you do this whole thing, and boom, you're done. It's actually phenomenal how it works. Again, simplecontacts.com/Andrew. Get $30 off your first order at Simple Contacts when you use the promo code Andrew. Check out it. Once again, this isn't a replacement for your, you know, annual eye health exam. I highly recommend that you guys keep doing that. This is a phenomenal, quick, and easy way to get your prescriptions to your door. So, Paul, you want to hear my tip? You want to hear what I discovered?
Mm-hmm. This is a video cable tip.
This is a video cable tip. Yeah, so I loved the Dreamcast. That was my go-to console. I was a Sega guy.
Yep, I had one.
And when I got, so I found an HDMI cable for the Dreamcast. Mm-hmm. And so what did it? I'm getting harassed. It
like S video plus composite or something. Is that how it was before?
It was just composite. It was just yellow cable. Just composite. And it looks like, you know, it looks like utter crap when you plug it into the TV. You know, now it's terrible. You know, watching it on an HD TV, it's barely usable. Mm-hmm. So I found my Xbox. I found my Dreamcast and I started playing around with some of the games that I had. I'm like, oh my God, this looks terrible, but I wonder how it would look over HDMI. So I started researching and I just found this thing like a week ago on Amazon. It's a $30 cable. It converts mm-hmm. the Dreamcast to HDMI. Night and day quality difference.
You know, you remember the old TVs, the old games rather, they had the TV game switch or whatever, and it came off the two antenna prongs, you know?
The RF, the RF thing, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they need, I guess, what plugged into the console itself was like a composite video and audio, right? On one cable, probably
it
mono,
was composite. Yeah. It was an AV cable.
This must exist, but an adapter for that to HDMI would be amazing as well, right? For the same reason.
You found it. So that's the cable. $30.
Yeah, it's neat.
There's a sign. My boss is holding a sign right now. So if you could see this picture, it would be unbelievable. He's holding a sign that says, Andrew doesn't know shit. And I agree with him, actually. I agree with everything he's saying. I think Paul would agree, too. But this cable, it's actually interesting. $30, and you just plug it in, and it upscaled the whole thing. I'm probably using the wrong term there when I say upscale, but it actually did an unbelievable job.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. Really, really cool. So that was my little tip. I'll have a link in the show notes for that, so you guys could buy it from Amazon. So when we're talking about, you know, taking these games and making the quality better, do you think that streaming service that's a couple years out is going to compete with the Xbox itself?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. But, you know, the thing is, there's always been kind of different levels of quality and experience in gaming, right? We have different hardware devices. Obviously, a game on a phone, like if you play Fortnite on a phone, it's not going to work like Fortnite on a PC or a console, whatever. Today, I think for hardcore gamers, the big battle is between consoles and PCs. And PCs can display far higher quality graphics and run faster and all that kind of stuff, at the expense of money and complexity, right? So
yeah,
it's a trade-off. And you as a gamer can choose which you prefer. Obviously, you can also play on a keyboard and mouse, which is faster and more accurate than a controller. But I think the Xbox service is going to come in on that chain between the mobile devices and above and below the consoles, right, at first. And I think it changes over time, but it's going to have the same value proposition to consoles that consoles today have to PCs, which is less complexity, less cost, you know, and then more versatility in this case, just to play wherever you are and whatever device you may have at the time.
You know, you're not like most from your generation where you actually play these games and you keep up and you like playing consoles. Once it left me, it left me, right? Like I could go back for a little bit, but yeah. I can't pick up Call of Duty now and play it. It's impossible for me. I haven't played it in 8 years, and it's gotten so difficult and complex where it just won't work as well as it would normally. But these, you know, easier games, and if I could go back and there's a library of all these Xbox games that I played and all these Xbox 360 games that I played that I'm comfortable with, I have no problem paying $20 a month for a service that I could use anywhere.
Yeah, right. I think it's, you know, if it's successful, right? Because we'll see. I mean, you know, there's going to be competition for one thing, but this type of service I think is going to make sense in the same way that a music service like Spotify makes sense. You know, there was a time when people were arguing, well, people want to own their music and blah 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 blah. You know,
listen, you and I were one of those people.
Absolutely, and we would talk about this a lot. You know, you spend a lot of time ripping CDs in our cases and managing the metadata and making sure that everything's correct and the album art's all there and it looks right and it's exactly how we want and blah blah blah. Or you just pay $10 a month and you don't worry about any of that because it's just all there. You know, and is there music that it, you know, I use Google Play Music instead of Spotify, but it doesn't really matter. Is there music that doesn't exist in those catalogs? Yes. Is that bothersome to me as kind of an old timer music lover or whatever? Yes. But is Spotify fine for like 90% of the population? Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. It's like there'll always be solutions for the people in the audience who have special needs, you know, and by special needs, I mean like, you know, this esoteric kind of whatever. Like you don't understand. I have a classic music library. I like records or, you know, whatever it might be. Yeah. There's always stuff for you guys to relax. You know, the other stuff is not going away. But I think it becomes less essential to the whole world. You know,
yeah.
We're not in the rip, mix, burn phase of music anymore.
We're in the phase where. We've had this conversation. I mean, you and I mean, a couple of years ago, we were talking about IDE, you know, ID3 tagging or whatever it was, you know, the meta tagging for these MP3s and what the best application for that is. It's actually, what an amazing shift, right? Over the last, and I went back and I started watching some of our older stuff and I'm thinking, you know, the conversation and the tone of how we look at technology and how we're treating technology has totally gotten disrupted from that generation. I mean, we were still, and I always joke about this, you know, I was one of these guys that would go to MS Config and turn off all the services every time when I did a format. I would go into Regedit, I would edit the back end, you know, I would turn off tablet support and fax support because I thought it would give me this much more memory. Nobody is thinking like that anymore. The entire thought process of how we use our products, and even on the technical side, you know, has kind of changed. We're not seeing everybody. I should be careful with that because I'm not saying everybody, but you know, most people have one of these. If you have an Android, you have a flagship Android, your thought isn't, I got to go home and put a different ROM on this, you know?
No, and by the way, but those people exist, and that's fine. But we just need to be honest about where they factor into things, because they're smaller, a tiny minority.
Yeah. And it's and getting smaller.
We have a responsibility to be kind of hip to what's happening here, right? I mean, if all you're doing is playing to the old school of people who like, well, I'm never going to pay for Spotify. I have my music on on Plex, and I screen, you know, whatever. Look, I'm glad that stuff exists. What I'm saying is, it's just not a mainstream activity. I wasted, in fact, I think it was Tuesday. I wasted almost my entire day trying to get this utility. It's a command line utility, which is insanity. But let me step back. I'm sorry. I don't like some of the stuff that's going on with Windows 10. And so sort of vaguely, what I would like is the ability to take a Windows 10 install and make sure that when I actually use it, it doesn't install all of the crap that I don't want, like all the stupid games and all that, you know, whatever. And businesses have some leeway over that stuff. They can use an enterprise version of Windows that doesn't include those games,
and for remove, example. Or Candy Crush doesn't install, for example.
Yeah. And they have, they also have like deployment tools that allow them to customize their install, for different PC sets so that they're, you know, it's the image they want. They can pre-install applications, whatever it is. And I've always been kind of on the periphery of that stuff. And I would like to be able to do that for myself because I install Windows all the time. And you go through these series of steps where you're kind of removing crap. And I have these guidelines for people in my book, like this is what you should look at after you install Windows 10. Wouldn't it be nice if I could automate this, you know? So I found some command line tool. It's really it's kind of a weird esoteric kind of a thing. And I wasted, like I said, the whole day trying to get this thing to work. And then I sort of realized, you know what?
What am I doing?
Like this is the behavior we're complaining about here. Like as helpful as this may be for someone like me, the reality is most people don't install Windows all that often. And if you have to clean install Windows 10 on an existing computer and you have to spend 15 minutes deleting Candy Crush and putting some setting exactly the way you want it, you know what? There are bigger concerns in life.
Than
that. Yeah. It's just not. And that's, you know, that's an example of how it's hard sometimes to get out of that old school way of thinking. You know,
I have to tell you, you know, when I was, you reminded me of something interesting. You know, I would format constantly my production machines, like my main production box. I would constantly, like every 6 to 8 months, I had to wipe this thing out because I would start noticing I was getting some bit rot with the applications we were using. I was having some sort of issues. It was a little bit of frame stutter. You know, I was noticing these things regularly. And since Windows 10, I really haven't had these issues come up. And remember, I skipped Windows 8. I couldn't install this on the production machine. So
benefiting from that.
I benefited greatly for a couple of years. But with all the hatred towards Windows 10 from certain people and how they don't want this and they don't want that and this feature is unnecessary, it's a much better refined operating system. And listen, I'm a heavy end user when it comes to this. We're running production stuff. We're doing multiple things and we're doing HD streaming and all this stuff on one machine. Things could go wrong and I'm seeing those things less and less now. It goes back to the not thoughtless process, but it's a seamless process where you install it, you got to work in and you're done. That's it. You don't have to tinker.
Yeah, I sometime in the next 30 days, I'm going to publish an article that's one of those, you know, good, bad, and the ugly type things where it's like Windows 10 at 3. You know, what's good, what's bad, what's, you know, terrible. And the central thing about Windows 10 that's fantastic, aside from just the return to a PC-centric kind of a user interface where Windows 8 had gone off in some disastrous direction, is, oddly enough, is kind of the updating system. Even though, like, there's too many updates. Like they've fine-tuned the update system to a point where if you were to clean install Windows 8 today, Windows 8.1 or Windows 7, you have like 127 updates to go. You know, you're going to be doing this for days. The way Windows 10 works is you install, it doesn't matter what version you have. You bring that thing up. You might have a feature update. That will be a fairly major update. But 9 times out of 10, what you have is the most recent month's cumulative update and maybe a driver update of some kind. That's the whole thing. Yeah. You might have to reboot once and you're done. It's completely up to date. That is such a, that is in many ways what you were just describing. It's kind of like the most amazing change. If you're, if you have been using Windows for years and years and had to reinstall Windows at any point in time, you can go back to whatever version you want to talk about. All the service packs, all the cumulative updates, all the, you know, the, whatever the updates were called back at the time, I don't know, whatever they are. You know, the .NET framework updates where you'd install one, reboot, have another one, reboot, have another one. Like, it was just like this constant cavalcade of baloney.
Sometimes an update would go bad.
Yes.
You would have a problem with that. And then you would have to start over. Oh, I've had that happen. I had, I don't know. Huge. And listen, most people don't even, you know, people that are listening to us understand, but most people that are doing computing on any level really don't give a crap about any of it. But it, you're absolutely right. The way that things have gotten so simplified, I don't know how we got onto this from Spotify, but Spotify is a great example. You know, we were talking about how, you know, it's changed the way that we catalog music. I could just go on Spotify and find whatever song I need. Obviously, I'm not going to find some obscure Bulgarian techno mix that I bought in 90, but
yep.
You know what I mean? Like, it's not for most people, it's enough. It's there.
That's the point. And, you know, for those who don't want to pay monthly, right, for whatever reason, or can't pay maybe, or do have those esoteric musical needs, those other options still exist. It's fine. You know, I think there's a semi-delusional thing that happens with people, especially tech people, tech enthusiasts, where they're very thoughtful about what they do. They do things for a very specific reason, which I think is great. But then they the disconnect is they have a hard time understanding why other people don't do exactly the same thing, don't agree with them that what they're doing is the right approach, you know, and have other opinions about it. And you see it everywhere. Like that is the fundamental nature of like platform wars, like Mac versus PC or iPhone versus Android or Xbox versus PlayStation, whatever. You see this instant bias kind of kicks in, which is terrible because, you know, they're making the right decision for them. Maybe, I mean, maybe not always, but they're not throwing the decision away. It's not like, well, I heard this was good and I just stopped thinking about it. You know, they're actually pretty thoughtful about it in most cases. It's just that they have a hard time understanding why other people thought about it too and aren't doing the same thing.
Yeah. Very interesting. I had something else I wanted to talk to you about, but I have two more topics here, so I don't know where to go. Did you have anything on your list?
Yeah. So let me just briefly mention the thing that just happened, because the thing that we lay at the start.
Oh, yeah. right at the start.
So, yeah, one of the weird controversies over the past year or so has been, actually, let's say 2 years, has been that updating thing on Windows 10, the other side of the updating thing on Windows 10, the part that falls into the ugly category, which is this Windows as a service notion that Microsoft from on high had decided that for Windows to fit into the whole Microsoft thing, the modern Microsoft thing, it had to be updated as a service. It had to be on the same release cadence as Office 365. It had to fit into a family of offerings called Microsoft 365 they could offer to businesses that would have a predictable and conformant update cadence or whatever. The result has been kind of up and down, right? So the anniversary update from two summers ago was a nightmare. It was a disaster reliability-wise. The subsequent two releases, the Creators Update, Fall Creators Update, were actually very reliable, and they rolled out very quickly. And for people like me who have been complaining about Windows as a service, that fact is a little bit of a conundrum, because I'm sitting here complaining of too many updates, and Microsoft could say pretty accurately, well, they're going out reliably, so what's the problem? And, you know, fair enough. So this past month, they released the April update, which is the latest feature update to Windows 10, the latest major version. And we've seen, I don't know, anecdotal is not fair, but the way I sort of think of it as chatter. And what I mean by that is, as someone who's active in the Windows community and I write about this stuff, I get a lot of feedback from readers, from people who listen to the podcast, from people I interact with on Twitter about the experiences that they have installing feature updates and other things, but let's just stick to the Windows feature updates. And what I'm seeing with this release is not matching what Microsoft is saying is happening. And what I mean by that is when the anniversary update was going badly, Microsoft saw that too. In fact, they slowed it down so they could fix the problems. When the creators update and the fall creators update were going well, that's what I was saying. I got almost no complaints about those releases. But with this latest release, I get a lot of complaints,
People who
can't install it, all kinds of everything. It doesn't install at all. It only installed after seven tries. It has all kinds of performance problems when it installs, incompatibilities. I had blue screens on my computers across multiple devices. I had my Intel NUC that the Bluetooth and some USB device disappeared after the upgrade. And I verified that it was the upgrade because I went back and forth to different versions and the devices would appear and they would disappear. And, based on my feedback, the stuff that I see, and I know I'm not Microsoft. I mean, I'm like one billionth the size of the amount of feedback or whatever, but it's not anecdotal. It's not like me and my brother-in-law. I mean, it's a lot of people contact me about this. This has not been going well. That's been my impression. The other half of it is anecdotally, and I will call this anecdotal. It seemed like everyone was getting this update, like everyone, like it was an unbelievable percentage of Windows users were getting the update immediately. And normally what they do is they phase it in over time where the known good configurations get it first. They experiment a little bit with the ones they're not really sure about. If those go well, they open up the gates a little bit more and it kind of speeds up as they go along. But I heard from multiple people who were like, I didn't even look for it and it installed, or I just looked at Windows Update and it popped up. And I at the time, let's say a month ago, I was saying, look, we got to wait for this Ad Duplex report. They put out this report every month and they show the rate of, the upgrade cycle in this case. And sure enough, 2 weeks later, the thing came out and they said, look, 50% of Windows 10 computers are already running this thing in one month.
That's an astronomical number.
Yeah. It's double the rate of the deployment of the previous version and three times the rate of the one before that. So that confirmed my anecdotal data based on my own feedback. But Microsoft has said to me privately, and now they've said it publicly, that they're not seeing the reliability issues that I'm seeing, that I sort of claim. I'm not inventing them, but I mean, based on the feedback I've gotten that I've been seeing. And today what they did was they announced that the April update is now available on 250 million computers. It is, they claim, the most reliable version yet. It has rolled out at twice the pace of the previous one. So the Ad Duplex data in that case matched up with what Microsoft said. There are still not 700 million computers in the world running Windows 10 or devices that includes Xboxes and other things. But that's a little odd because the 700 million number had come up, I think, first back in April. Terry Myerson mentioned it. And the assumption was that now we'll be at 700. But in this announcement, they said we're still just short of 700 million. But let's just say it's 700. It's probably pretty close. 250 million of 700 million is not 50%, right? That's whatever that is, 30%, something like that. So that's lower than what AdDuplex was saying, but it's still a huge chunk. And then as of today, Windows 10 April 2018 update is fully available. And what that means is everyone's going to get it. So if you're running Windows 10 and your computer is compatible, I suppose there are some computers that might not be, you're going to get it now. You're going to get it. It's June 14th. So this is about 6 weeks after it first shipped, roughly 5 or 6 weeks. They have never deployed a major update like this, a feature update this quickly ever in the history of Windows, period, but certainly in the history of Windows 10. It's incredible.
So do you think this is a positive, the quick deployment, or do you think a lot more people are going to have these issues with compatibility?
Look, I trust Microsoft, but I am suspicious of this information. And the reason is I really do have a lot of people telling me stuff. I mean, I don't make this up. There's no reason for me to invent this story where it's not going well. So all I can say is this. If you have not gotten this yet, you should go into settings on your computer now and defer this update for 2 weeks or 4 weeks or a period of time, just to see how it goes, just in case. The issue is, if you have Windows 10 Pro, that's easy. There's actually a UI for that. You can defer the update. You can choose how long. You can do it for up to a year if you want, and that's great. For the majority of people who have Windows 10 Home on their consumer PCs, however, you can't defer an update. So the only thing you can do is deploy a kind of a workaround, and the workaround is you go into settings, it's like network and internet, and you go to the properties of your network connection, and you configure it as a metered connection. And that means it treats it like a broadband connection, like a cellular connection. They will not download feature updates over a metered connection because you're paying for it. And those things can be huge, like 3-4 gigabytes. And that can be prohibitively expensive, right? So like, for example, on Project Fi at $10 a gigabyte, just downloading that update. And by the way, it doesn't always work the first time. You might have to download it multiple times. That just happened to me on this HP I'm using over on the side. That would be $35 to $40 every time I downloaded it, right? Because that's the cost on my network of that bandwidth. They won't do it. The problem with that approach is that you're not going to get anything else either, right? Except for the worst security updates. So if you're gonna do this workaround, my advice would be to make a reminder, you know, in Cortana or your to-do app or in your calendar, whatever you want to use, for 2 weeks or 4 weeks or whatever, and just say, hey, turn off the metered connection, because Patch Tuesday is coming next month, right? As it does every month. And you're going to want to make sure you get those updates.
Yeah.
Yeah. And but at that point, looking at the calendar, like Patch Tuesday is the second Tuesday of the month. So it's almost, not quite, but it's almost 1 month from now. That should be enough time, right, to know if everything's okay, or for Microsoft to fix problems if there are any. You should be okay installing the feature update. I just get too much information for me to, I hate to say it like this. Like, I don't mean to say I don't believe Microsoft. I mean, I know they have a lot more data than I do, obviously, but.
You're noticing something else. Yeah.
I get way too much negative feedback. And I know I hear from a certain part of the population for sure. I mean, the normal people aren't going to typically contact me, but you know, they're saying like their support calls are down, that, you know, PC makers are seeing it, you know, I don't know. it just doesn't jive with what I'm saying. So just be careful, I think is my general advice.
Very interesting. You know what I wanted to touch on, really quickly. I lost it here. Have you been continuing a usage of Mojave?
Of Mojave?
Mojave.
Oh, the Mac Mojave.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm keeping it on there. I'll keep it up to date as new betas come out. I mean, I don't actually use the Mac every single day. I actually just sat down on the couch last night, was kind of tooling around with it. I mean, why do you ask?
Okay, so I wanted to know how you use it. Do you use like iPhotos? I keep calling it iPhoto. No. I can't stop calling it. You don't use the Photos app?
No. So,
and how about iMessage?
Nope.
Yeah, so I've always been curious if you use those two applications, how much more you would kind of be tied to using it.
It would be a little more complicated. Yeah, I mean, what you're really asking is like how far up Apple's ass I am.
Yeah, so, pretty much. Yeah, in other words, how far up Apple's ass are you, Paul?
Yeah, because honestly,
I'm like deep in it.
Yeah, no, I can still see light. So I use iCloud for device backups only. My kids both use an iPhone, and I have iOS devices. I have a couple of iPads now. Still, and I'm sure I'll buy some future iPhone, you know, like I usually do. But I the full Apple experience is you have an iPhone, an iPad, and a Mac. Use iCloud for everything, right? You store your photos there. You pay them some kind of, you know, amount of money to put everything up there. You can synchronize your folders between the devices, which I think is useful, like documents and the desktop and so forth. I don't do any of that stuff. And you get the messaging integration, right? So you can be on your Mac and sending iMessages over your phone and all that stuff. It's great. It's too Apple-centric for me. It's too much of a one-way street. I refuse to do that kind of stuff. And so I try to use stuff that works everywhere. We talked about portability before with video games. I think of this. I think I wrote about this recently. If I didn't, I've been meaning to. But you know, this notion of portability. Like I try to ensure that everything I do is as portable as possible, right? So, you know, in the old days when there was DRM on music, it made it tough to support, like to buy, like buying music from iTunes in the early days was like terrible. A dead end. Like it, you could only use it on an Apple device. That stuff all opened up and it was kind of cool. So now all the music I bought from Apple works wherever I want to be. I happen to be on Google Play Music today. It works fine. It doesn't matter. If I go to Spotify tomorrow, it's all going to work. It doesn't matter. That's nice. I like that. That's portable. Movies, it's starting to happen a little bit with Movies Anywhere. So I'd say about two-thirds of the movies that I bought from Apple or from other services now work across all of the services. So when I bring up, I use an Android phone, I bring up Google Play Movies and TV. I have a couple hundred movies in there. And I didn't buy any of them from Google, or maybe two or three, but I bought most of them from Apple, but they all work on my Android phone now. And that's beautiful. That's portable. I love that kind of thing. So the problem with iMessage, the problem with Apple Photos, the problem with iCloud is the same thing. It's that Apple one-way dead-end street, and I just have no interest in that. I'm not going to limit myself to be like to force myself to be stuck in that ecosystem. I want the stuff I use to work everywhere.
Yeah, I was just curious if you use those when you do the tests, because I'm curious how much of a different experience you would have overall, because we talk about this every week, because yeah. Really it's those little things that ties you into an ecosystem. You know, I absolutely love Google Photos, but
I don't think it's little things, to be honest. I don't mean this in a conspiracy theory way. I don't mean it's like insidious.
I want it to be in a conspiracy theory way, and I hope it ends with the Earth is flat.
It's smart of them to do this as much as they can, because everything that they do adds value to the user who sticks within their stuff. So it's kind of a win-win for these people, you know. I just don't like being locked in like that. I'm sure that the world would be great, and I would be in this unicorn aura of happiness at all times. If I stuck to all the Apple stuff, but I don't know. We talked recently. I happen to prefer Android. I'm using Android now on my phone. I'm testing some Android tablets right now, and I got to tell you, the iPad is still a better experience on tablets. There's no doubt about it. Yeah. When it comes to computers, I very much prefer Windows 10 to the Mac. Very much. Are there problems? Yeah, for sure. But I test everything all the time. I use Chromebooks all the time. I use that Mac. I've been testing Linux again, and it's always like, none of that really excites
Linux?
Me.
What are you using with Linux? I'm curious.
What am I using with Linux?
Yeah. What distro?
Oh, I've done different ones. So, I mean, I pretty much stick to, the popular ones like Ubuntu, like the main Ubuntu one, and Mint Linux. But I've tried a bunch of different things. Like Elementary is kind of interesting. There's a whole kind of swath of that stuff, but, Linux, and actually Chrome OS as well, start to get more interesting as more and more stuff we do occurs on the web. And as Chrome adapts on both the Mac and on Linux to do what we've been doing on Windows for a long time, which is allow you to have shortcuts to web apps as if they were apps, and then with progressive apps to have them actually be installable apps, it makes the underlying platform less important. And it's possible over time that, you know, my fixation on Windows could, you know, disappear. Today it's still there in full force. I like I said, I try these things all the time. I have never once used anything like the, you know, like the Mac or Linux or Chrome OS and said, oh, you know, maybe, you know, I still am like, no, it's still not what I want. You know, I'm open to the change. I mean, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I may start playing around with Linux again, because I'm looking at Ubuntu, and I haven't used. I've spent a couple of years since I last installed it on something. But the reality is, all the same applications are on every platform. Everything that you need to do day to day could be done on any platform at this point. You're not missing out. You know, I mean, Spotify, Skype, VLC player, Firefox, Slack.
Spotify is a great example of something that is Chromium. Everywhere. It's kind of amazing. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
There's a whole list of these applications that's essentially.
I have certain things like I use Skype, for example. So Skype is interesting because you can actually use the Skype Android app on Chrome OS now, and it's kind of a full Skype experience, at least how I use Skype. So that's interesting. Skype on Linux is a different story. That's not, you know, I don't know if that will ever really be there. But I use, you know, if I used Microsoft Office more, that actually is pretty good cross-platform. You can use web versions on Linux, whatever. But I use Markdown editors, and they're different on every platform. And that one's a little hard for me, because I found one on the Mac I really like, called Markdown, which in many ways is probably the best one I use. Markdown Pad 2, which is what I use in Windows, is discontinued. They don't support it anymore. It's never going to be updated. It's not anywhere else. That sucks, but I've never found a good one there. And then Linux, I'd have to go look. I don't even know what's available on Linux. I haven't really gotten to that point. But if you're going to look at Linux, my advice would be download the ISOs, make the install key. They all have that thing where you can kind of run it off the boot. You don't have to install it. And I wouldn't install it on a physical computer until you actually run one of those things and say, yeah, okay, this one looks good to me. Like, I could do this. Because there's all these versions, they have different UIs. Some of them have like a dock that's a little bit like Mac OS X. Most of them don't, but they all have their own little, their own vibe, depending on the distribution. Yeah,
it's interesting. All right, we're out of time. Look at us. I got to go back to work.
Huh?
Just like new world I'm in. I haven't said that in a long time. It's like a real jerk. Yeah. By the way, I did get one of these. I wanted to talk about this. I got a Sony A7 mirrorless that I'm learning. I do want to feature this next week on the show because there's a lot to talk about with this little device.
Now, why did you get this? What are you going to do with it?
We have like a photography studio in the office. So for some photography shoots, like last minute stuff that we want to do, we could just do it here. But I also want to test this as a camera for live streaming. So
nice.
Yeah, so I'm going to play around with this and see how well this works. But it's very impressive. But there are some stuff, coming from the Canon world of DSLRs. It's you are missing certain things. And I don't know if this would make me happy to replace my DSLR with.
Oh, I see. Why?
Yeah.
Why do you say that?
There are a couple of weird things, like the focus, like the autofocus. It is a pain in the ass.
Okay.
And I don't know if it's a known issue or not, but it really is not a very pleasant experience. So, I'm testing a whole lot of stuff. So we'll see. Maybe I could find a setting and, it's all new already. It's still all new. So little by little, I'm testing it out, but I want to do like more of a full review.
But is it better than the Pixel 2 XL camera? Really? I mean, really?
Nothing is better than the Pixel 2 XL camera. Nothing. There's not one thing in the world. Yeah. All right, guys. That's it for this week. For all things Paul, go to therot.com. Go sign up for Therot Premium. You could watch him and Brad talk about all the stuff that we're talking about now daily. Every morning, get your quick updates every single morning. You could also help us and fund us by going to patreon.com/whatthetech. And when you make a purchase on Amazon, be sure to go to gfq.co/Amazon. I always get that reverse. It's gfq.co/Amazon. Bookmark it. And whenever you make a purchase, go there and buy it through that. And that's it. We'll see you all next time. Take care.